2001 draft produced some of the greatest players the AFL has ever seen. Together, they've won 34 premierships, 6 Brownlows, and 6 Naismith medals. There's 300 gamers, all Australians, club champions, and countless other award winners. Over 4 episodes, we catch up with some of the key players in the Super Draft 15 years later to talk about what life was like before and after they were famous. In our final episode, Steve Johnson and Jimmy Bartel talk about growing up together at Geelong with Gary Ablett Jr. and James Kelly, where they helped form a 3-time premiership team. Jimmy, you can start off. I want to know what you remember of a 17 or 18 year old Steve Johnson the first time you crossed paths with him.
First impressions, the thing that stands out the most for me was we had a practice game, Country versus Metro at Sandringham, and Leon Harris, for a lot of guys who have come across Vic Country, hates Vic Metro with a passion. It's borderline crazy how much he hates Vic Metro. And I remember playing him, and this bloke in the forward pocket took an absolute blinder of a mark. It's one of the better marks you ever see, and he was just reckless. And I think, geez, in a practice game, this guy is completely fired up. He just stood out as a hard running forward. So yeah, I think I remember most that mark in the forward pocket. I reckon if you're looking at the right hand end, closest to the road. So there you go, I can remember where it happened. So it definitely stuck in my mind.
Sounds like you remember it as well.
Yeah, well, I obviously didn't make much of a first impression. We did play a practice game before that at Witten Oval, but...
I've been hitting the head so many times, I can't remember which game we played.
Well, you're wearing a helmet then. Yes. Maybe you should have at some stage through the AFL career. But, no, I remember it because I certainly hadn't solidified my position in the Vic Country squad for that particular year. And that was our last practice game that we were playing down at Sandringham, and... I sort of had to put everything on the line to sort of hopefully leave a good impression with the coaches. And I remember, basically after going back for the flight, and someone took the legs out from under me. I think it was David Roden. I landed on my neck pretty heavily, and I think that was the moment that probably got me from being, on the cusp of maybe being selected or maybe not, to actually in the squad. Leon Harris said at the time, any player that's willing to do that in a practice match is going to be playing in my team. So although it might have been a little bit silly, or it might have just been good fortune that my legs were taken out from me, it was something that helped me along the way, I think.
And you might as well claim
Jimmy
it.
Remembers it, so that's great. Yeah,
stuck in your memory all these years. What about personality-wise at that age? What was Jimmy like?
Jimmy, I just remember had a big, everyone knew who Jimmy was, even though I hadn't played in too many representative squads growing up. I missed out on quite a few, but Jimmy had come through the year earlier. He'd played for Vic Country, and he'd been an All-Australian player the year before. So he had a bit of an aura about him, even, playing with him in that first game at Witten Oval that we did play. And I just remember sort of watching the way he went about it, and remember playing with him and thinking, geez, this guy's going to be an AFL star for sure. So, in terms of his personality, he was pretty quietly spoken, but he was the captain of our Vic Country team that year, and I guess when he spoke, all the players listened. So most of the stuff, I think, was through his actions, but he certainly had our attention from the word go.
It's interesting because there always is a little bit of a pecking order, isn't there? Like, no matter what age you are, everyone knows who the good players are. But it feels like, there's obviously a lot of things written and said about the draft now. Was there that sort of attention on it back then from what you can remember? Was there any of that external pressure that, geez, I'm being watched here? Or was it just...
There was a little bit. I remember, in that season, I only just got into the Murray Bush Rangers squad. I was selected in the first game on the bench, and in the second game as well. And after about 3 or 4 games, the invitations had already come out for the Vic Country training squad, which must have been made on pretty much the previous year or reputation. So certainly there was players that were being talked up and other players trying to earn their stripes, but it probably wasn't as much media hype in terms of what was going to be happening in 12 months' time as there is now, but you certainly knew who the players were that, you know, there was speculation about maybe being the top 10 picks.
Yeah.
I think you always used to, I think they'd have a player a week in the Herald Sun, and there was always some cheesy photo where you'd have half your school uniform on and they'd throw your tack up jumper and you'd look and be, you know, some guy from Sandy or Dandenong who was, he looked like a man at 22, those big Vic Metro kids, and he just kicked eight against someone and you'd go, geez, when are we going to play this monster? Or you'd pick up the little record and there'd be some, everyone would flick through and there'd be some kid who's had 42 handballs and 51 kicks because they've just doctored it up or something like that.
Remember that Josh Jennings?
Yeah,
from Gippsland Power.
From Gippsland every week. Yeah, everyone go, who's this Jennings bloke? He's having 30 kicks and 30 handballs. So I think, yeah, as an under-18 player, you'd look at it and you just go, oh, this is unbelievable. This is what we're up against.
Yeah. You had, I mean, you played with Gary Ablett
Junior
that year. Was there as much within the group as much, oh, this is Gary Ablett's son, like, how good's this kid? I don't know. I can't remember as much in the paper and in the media as there probably would be now if he was coming through, but
yeah,
within the group of players,
I think there was a fair bit for what that time was. It sounds like we're talking the olden days for that, but
15 years,
yeah, but I still remember it was a training session where, because the Falcons zone went from Geelong to Warrnambool, and every now and then to help the Warrnambool kids out, we'd then bust down and do training of a night down there, and Gazza wasn't too keen on going down to Warrnambool for training one night, and we splashed all over the Geelong Addy and things like that. And it was amazing. We're talking about an under-18s player not making the training. So Mick and Mick Turner, you know, oh, you can't play this week, Gaz. And it made news, like an AFL player. And but I think, like a lot of kids, we were just hoping his dad would pick him up for training. So we'd all just watch the great man. Like everyone's like...
Hop around and get some autographs.
Yeah, looking out of the change rooms to see if they can see Gaz Sr.
Yeah, it would have been pretty weird. We've had a few come through the Falcons. Did you, I don't know, I guess coming through, you wouldn't really look around and think, who am I going to get drafted with, would you? It's...
I think you hope that, it sounds a bit fanciful, I think you hope that they all get drafted in some way, like as many of your teammates as possible. I think you're aware though, once the squads, or you play against some really good kids from other teams, like Stevie was saying, like you know their reputation, and then you've played against them, you go, oh, that kid's a lock to be drafted, or, you know, that one will be. And you start to sort of shift it in your own mind, you know, who sits where. And then you sort of compare against your teammates. You go, oh, I think we might have four or five, whatever, get drafted.
Yeah. When did the club start to show some interest? Can you remember that? Like, how did they get in touch initially?
Oh, I can only really remember once or twice just hearing that someone had spoken to a bloke in the crowd that's from Carlton or Sydney that was apparently there watching me play, but wasn't really sure if it was true or not. But I think the first sort of contact I ever had was when I was selected in the All-Australian team. I think I got a letter from maybe six or eight of the clubs just congratulating me, and that was a bit of a buzz. And then I guess, yeah, it wasn't until I went to the draft camp that you know, I was lucky enough to get there through automatic selection. I just didn't think that I was still in the same caliber as some of the players that I'd played against. I remember the speed of the games at the state level and thinking, geez, these guys are on another level. Blokes like Luke Ball and the like, they were just great to watch. And yeah, even getting to the draft camp, I sort of felt like I was a little bit away from some of the other guys, but then sitting down with the, you know, I think I sat down with 13 or 14 clubs and had a meeting, and when they sort of tell you that you've impressed them, then it starts to sort of dawn on you that it could be a possibility.
Yeah, okay, so it wasn't until that late in the year that you thought maybe.
I know that, you know, I guess when you look at when the All-Australian squads come out, you know, from previous years, you know, there's generally maybe 80% of those players get drafted, but I'd come from such a long way back that, you know, it was only 12 months earlier that I was playing just local footy at Wangaratta, and you know, it's just got my way into the Murray Bush Rangers. I feel like I only just made my way into Vic Country, and then I was surprised that I was picked in the Australian team that year. I didn't really feel like I had an awesome carnival, but maybe it was because I was comparing what I, you know, was able to do at the Murray Bush Rangers to what I'd done at Vic Country. It just, you don't sort of put up the same sort of numbers or feel like you've had the same sort of influence. So you didn't. I was a little bit surprised that I was picked in that team. So I sort of felt like I just scraped my way through, and then, you know, the week after that carnival, I was injured playing for Wangaratta in the week off and missed the last 10 games of the season. So I wasn't really sure where everything sat at that stage.
Did you have a sense of it, Jimmy? Because you probably had that focus on you for most of the years. Steve said you were the one everyone was watching. But did you, you know, even have those moments where you thought, am I good enough? Where do I fit in? What's going to happen?
I wasn't even thinking, was I good enough or anything, because I was still playing and enjoying a lot of cricket. So I actually still didn't do, you know, the football pre-season. The year before where I made All-Australian, I wasn't old enough to get drafted. Birthday being at the end of the year, I played my first year at Falcons at 16 and my second year at 17. So just because of the way they, you know, the age cap where it comes in. So I was still just thinking, I don't know, just year in the moment, just, oh, well, then getting into cricket season again. And then, I was sort of just enjoying that. I thought maybe I've done enough, then just hope that I was hopeful that someone would take me and get me into an actual proper training program that I'd be able to improve. And I was confident I'd done enough at underage level for someone to take a chance on you.
Yeah. Do you remember many interviews?
I did the draft camp. Yeah, you look, it's a big cattle market. You've got the grey T-shirts on with the number, and you've got the swing tag over, and they just pretty much just come up and fill in your thing, see you at 8:15 in room 26, and it'd just be, your card would be marked out like that. And I remember meeting Port Adelaide, and Mark Williams was at Port Adelaide. Did you get to meet him?
No, I didn't.
The famous stories about player interviews. Yeah. I remember him challenging a guy once by
to
saying,
jump off.
Yeah, jump out the window. You reckon you're tough? Like, jump out that window over there. And the poor kids.
Yeah,
just...
he was renowned for as you're probably about to elaborate on, but some of the stories coming back from on that particular camp of the things that he was saying to the players made everyone that had an interview in the next day or two very nervous.
Yeah.
Well, do you remember anything?
Yeah, he goes, how tall are you? And I said, oh, I don't know, 183 or something at that stage. And he goes, no, you're not. And I said, oh, they just measured me earlier today. Is you not? He goes, stand up. And so he's had me in this little room going back to back with him. Yeah, he goes, I've got you covered, I've got you covered. And he's egging on their fitness guy, you know, Russell, I think he's now at Andrew Russell at Hawthorn. I've got him, don't know, I've got him. And then he was talking about the Geelong or the Vic Country boys liking beer too much. And he goes, oh, there's a beer in the fridge if you want one. And
Leave
that alone. But I think he challenged Luke Molan to have a beer with him. We went pick nine.
Someone would have gone for it.
Yeah, I think that might have been the start and the end for Luke Molan. He liked his beer.
They do try and get you sort of unsettled a little bit, some of them, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, I think they just want to see how you react. Yeah. They've got all the measurables there. I think they know a lot about you as a footballer before you get there, but it's just, I guess it's like the show ring or the mounting yard for horse races. They just want to see them all parading around.
Yeah. How many came up to see you before the
Up to see me? Oh, well, yeah. I had, I think, about 14 of the 16 clubs at the time interview me in Canberra at the draft camp. But then I probably had 5 or 6 clubs come and see me in Wangaratta. A lot of those recruiters are still in the business, actually. But there was one particular team that, I was meeting Geelong, and so the Ford pulled up out the front. I knew Stephen Wells was coming, and then another Ford pulled up behind his, and I sort of lived on about an acre, so it was probably 50 metres out the front, and I'm sort of peering out through the curtains.
Yeah.
And I seen Bomber Thompson jump out of the car. And I actually could not believe it. So, you know, an AFL senior coach had just driven, you know, three and a half hours to actually come and speak to me. So
First one to come up to your house?
Yeah, with the only senior coach to come to my house. I mean, the other guys were, Brisbane, Kinnear Beetson, and Fantasia from Adelaide, and I think West Coast and Sydney, I think those guys come and visited, but to have the senior coach there, I just could not believe it. So the first thing I was sort of thinking was, I can't wait to get to school tomorrow and tell my mates that Bomber Thompson was at my house yesterday. But yeah, it was really good, and it just, I guess it goes to show that they probably planned, or he probably liked what he's seen from the videos and really wanted to get a grasp of what type of personality I was as well. So, yeah.
He came to see you too, didn't he, Jimmy?
Yeah, Bomber and Wellesley.
Yeah.
Yeah, they showed up, but it must have been a long day because it didn't seem like Bomber was too keen.
really?
Yeah, I think he just left it all to Wellesley to do all the questioning. I think being a Geelong boy, I think they knew enough about me. I guess they were just asking just some more general questions to get you know as a person. And
yeah
being only a few blocks away from the club, I think they knew all they needed to know.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty easy comp. But I wasn't 100% sure until the night before. Wellesley drove out to our place and said, "Oh, yeah, if you're there with our pick, we'll take you." So it was a big weight off the shoulders.
Yeah, I bet. Then you just had to sweat it out for the first seven picks, yeah?
Yeah, well, West Coast were the other club that came out home. I think that was more because it's on the way to Colac.
Yeah, okay.
Where Luke Hodge number one and West Coast were pick three, and they were all weighing up, if it was Judd went one, who would go two, and it was all this jigsaw of...
Who would get through and...
Yeah, because... I think at that stage they were all umming and ahhing over out of those three who goes first, and then it was like a domino effect. Well, would the Saints then take Judd or that sort of
Ball.
Stuff? Ball, yeah.
And Graham Pollock was kind of in the mix too.
So for West Coast, so it was all that. So it was good having a chat to John Worsfold and things like that. But Ashley Sampey picked six, and a local kid over there was their pick, and the Kangaroos wanted a tall, and David Hale went pick seven.
So you didn't have too stressful a draft day?
No, it wasn't too bad.
In the end.
Well, Mick Turner came and picked me up and had Hodgie in the front. He'd gotten up nice and early, Mick, to go pick him up. And he just kept reminding me the whole way, now Hodgie's going to be pick one and you make sure you pat him on the back. And you've got your Falcon shirt. He rang the night before. He goes, "Oh, make sure your mum cleans your Falcon shirt." I go, no worries. So we had the whole routine down. But it went so quick after that because it wasn't on TV or anything.
No.
And it's like, I went all through and doing all the pats on the back, the Hodgie, and then we were up. I remember Steve's name because we had two picks in the 20s, Charlie Gardner. I missed Kel's name, James Kelly's name being read out. But then I said, Geelong. And then I had to look up on one of the big projectors. Cool, I'm at the Cats. And borrowed Mick's phone and said, rang Mum, go, I'm staying in Geelong.
So your mum wasn't there?
No, because it was the first time it flicked over from... I think Foxtel were picking up the coverage, but it was the year after.
Yeah, right.
And yeah, there was
nobody covering it.
No coverage of it.
No, and nobody really jumped on the internet to fill it all out. So it was just, I'm staying at home, Mum. Yeah, good. Okay, I'll see you at home later.
Pretty low key.
Yeah.
Where were you? Were you there as well?
No, I wasn't there.
You were back home?
I was back home in Wangaratta and...
Draft party?
I did have it. Well, I didn't plan the draft party, but I started to get people rocking up at my house from about 10 o'clock in the morning, and I started sort of having a go at Mum and Dad, saying, "Have you invited these people around here? I'm no certainty to be drafted. It'd be a terrible result if they all come around for a celebration and I didn't get picked up." But I guess leading into the draft, I was quite confident that I was going to be picked up in the end, because I didn't think it was going to be Geelong, even though I knew they were interested. I thought it might have been Hawthorn.
Okay.
They seemed to be the one team that sort of guaranteed me that I'd be getting drafted out of the whole lot. They, I remember John Turnbull was at my house and he said, "Look, we've got pick maybe 16, 20 and 32. I think with those three picks, I think Rick Ladson,
Daniel Elstone,
pick 20, and Campbell Brown ended up going at 32.
Right.
But I remember him saying to me, we look at you at 16, it'll probably be pick 20 that will take you. But if we don't take you at pick 20, I can pretty much sign on a piece of paper here that we'll take you at pick 32. So that made me feel a little bit more comfortable that, you know, I'd find somewhere.
How are you following it, given
well,
that there was no...
There was some internet coverage where, you know, but, you know, being in Wangaratta and being on a delayed line, we had a computer set up on the pool table, and I was just sitting in the lounge room with a few mates. I actually felt a little bit sick at the time that they'd read out the first round, and no, you haven't been picked in the first round. And then, you know, the home phone rang, and it was a lady from Geelong saying, "Steve, it's Abby, and we've just drafted you to the Cats." And, yeah, I mean, it was just a sense of relief, but that's how I found out. It would have been great if it was on TV and you actually were fortunate enough to experience that high where everyone sees that you get drafted, but I guess it's the same result.
Exactly. Why did you think, was it more that you thought Hawthorn was super keen, or was there a reason you thought Geelong wouldn't pick you, or you just didn't know?
No, I obviously thought that they were interested, because Bomber, when I went and I played at Murray Bush Rangers, obviously, and there was probably six or seven guys that were you know, capable of being drafted that year, and when I spoke to them, he hadn't been to any of their houses, and you know, three or four of them, like Mark McGough and Jared Waite and those guys, they live pretty close to me, so it was a little bit of a surprise that he hadn't gone and visited anyone else. But just having Hawthorn basically guarantee me that they were going to draft me was one thing that sort of helped settle me a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I suppose the next week you turn up and you're all teammates all of a sudden, which is one of the best things about the draft, really, isn't it? I mean, it brings you all together from all these different parts of...
Yeah, well, we were...
the country.
Well, the best thing was, like Jimmy alluded to a little bit, when we were drafted, I looked at the names that had gone to Geelong, and there'd been eight guys drafted that year that had a big clean out, and you know, quite a few of us knew each other. I'd played Vic Country with Gazza and with Jimmy. Is there anyone else? But so we were teammates not many months earlier, and then you know, Henry Playfair was also a country boy, not too far away, but he'd gone to school in Sydney. And Charlie Gardner and Matt McCarthy, they were also drafted along with James Kelly. And I don't know, we just gelled straight away. As soon as we got to the club, so we got drafted on the Friday maybe, and we were told we'd expected at the club on the Monday. So it was unbelievable how quick it all happened. And then we got there, and it was just nice that there's so many players. I mean, Jimmy was probably, and Gaz have been a little bit different. They were staying at home, but we'd all moved from our homes, and we were basically then starting our career at Geelong together.
Bizarre, and then 15 years later, you look back and it's just brought you all together for
a
big chunk of your life.
What I reckon helped also is Geelong had a massive draft like that 2 years beforehand, so it was nearly half, three quarters of the club were within a couple of years of each other, so it was really easy to bond with guys.
Yep, you're like about the same age.
Everyone was the same age. Would they have another eight in the draft too before that, like 2 years before that? Plus, you throw in some rookie picks around there in between, like Max Rook and Paul Chambers. So there was like over 20 guys from between about 18 and 20, 21. So like it was very easy. It was almost like everyone was back at high school again.
Yeah. How much of a part did that playing what happened, do you think, and what that team achieved? Just the fact that you were so close in age and that you started together, you were invested in it together, I suppose, but not that you really would have had that sense at the age of 18 what was possible.
Yeah, I think it probably, I guess in a way, made it easy or clear for the club of how they're going to take it forward. So, right, we've got this group of talent, we're going to instill the way we want to play, and we didn't have like mishmashes from eras or anything like that. We just had like Matt Scarlett and Tom Harley were probably only 23 at that stage, so they were senior players to us, and I guess they could just put their real stamp of how they think football should be played, and we just got thrown in it all together, and you know, learn together. And we got the genuine sense of, all right, time for you guys to build something as a group.
Yeah, I reckon it really helped. Not only were we given opportunities, probably in front of a few older guys. I think Ronnie Burns and Aaron Lord were players that were sort of in my position that, you know, the club probably let go because they wanted to give opportunities to someone like me and Charlie Gardner. But we were also so competitive, I think, in the way we went about our training. When we were doing gym sessions, all us younger boys were trying to outdo each other. When we were doing running, you know, 3K time trial, we're trying to beat each other. And we just, I think the one thing that was most common amongst that group that was drafted and the group from 2 years before is the competitiveness of the personalities and the individuals amongst that group. Yes, it took a while for it all to gel, but you know, being with each other from a young age and learning how each other play and going through those tough times together certainly held us in good stead for when we're really prepared to take on the AFL.
Yeah, because when you go to a club and you start out, how long does it take to get that sense of where you fit in and how good you could be and all those little things, I suppose, that you can't know until you actually get there and do it?
I don't know. I don't think you really feel comfortable at the level until you start to put a sort of a group of consecutive games together where you play at a reasonable level, and that was really hard for us because, you know, there was a lot of young players getting opportunities, and that was clearly the direction of the club. They wanted to give opportunities, even if you know, we might be holding out an older player at the time. We probably felt like when we went back to VFL level, we would have pretty good games. Like we felt like we earned our spot, but you know, if it was a 50-50 call, they were going to go with the youth, which, I mean, you know, it's hard to know when that exactly come to a point where we were ready, but I think just the way, you know, the coaches went about our training as well. We used to train with a huge amount of intensity at training. There was a real focus on the things that were going to hold up in finals. So Bomber Thompson used to just drive into us about contested ball, players that could win their own footy, tackling, all the basic, all the fundamentals that still win finals till this day. And he knew that if he just drove that sort of stuff into the young group, eventually it'd come to the fore.
Well, wouldn't you often say, you'd go, we might get a few injuries at training, but so be it, like almost for the greater good, like, you know, one could go down at training, but you know, this is how we're all going to learn.
Yeah.
And I guess the other part of it was, you know, because we were sort of young players and we were just enjoying getting games under our belt, we probably didn't know the significance of the opportunity that we had, and we probably enjoyed ourselves a bit too much off the field. A few of us a lot too much.
We're natural 21-year-olds.
We had the best of both worlds. Yeah. We must admit, like, you know, if there's one thing that the young players are going to miss out on a little bit now, I mean, they still get a few opportunities, but yeah. we were able to sort of play footy. We're 18, 19-year-olds playing AFL footy, going out and having a drink card ready for us at the nightclub.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't get in trouble for that. Like, that was just the way...
That was just how it worked.
Well, you'd show up to recovery, and if someone came to recovery you didn't see out, you'd be like, mate, where were you? Like, seriously, why weren't you out? Now it's like, mate, why were you out? It's the opposite there.
I reckon all that stuff actually bonded us, the group, together, because we become really, really close.
Really quickly.
Yeah. Off the field, yeah.
Until you start, what, jumping over fences with...
I certainly wouldn't recommend you jump over any pub roofs when it's a lockout, but...
Looking at it now, it could have been a good thing. You played nearly 280 games?
Yeah.
Probably made them nice and stiff, your ankles.
Yeah. Well, I haven't needed to waste any money on strapping because I've never strapped my ankles since.
They've
just got no movement in them, so...
You're right, though. Maybe that's something that, yeah, footy's kind of lost a little bit, like that social side of things. And you were kids, weren't you? I mean, you didn't have to move away from home, but you've moved away from home, James Kelly.
But they're a lot more professional now before they get to AFL level. Like, I even look at the Geelong Falcons and things like that, and you'd know the same with how they come in, because you've got a lot of talented young kids that they know, like, diets and weight programs and all this sort of stuff. They're kitted out amazingly well. Like, they've all got skins and things like that. We used to wear, you probably wear the Wang Magpies jumper to Murray Bush Rangers. I'd have the Bell Park jumper on, and your school socks and things like that.
Yeah.
They're all kitted out. They know exactly how to prepare. It was just still footy, like, for us. It was fun. It was enjoyable. We wanted to get drafted and we were competitive, as Steve was saying, but it's just, I don't know, it's like they start their footy professionalism at like 15, 16 now, whereas ours is day one at Geelong Footy Club.
Once you get there, it's like, okay, you've got to do this.
You've got to do pre-season. You're like, what's that?
What is that? I guess that's another reason why it might have taken us 3 or 4 years, but in saying we had the best of both worlds, we were playing footy, we were getting the games under our belt, and we just felt so fortunate to be playing league footy and still being able to have a bit of fun off the field at the time as well. But then when we realised that, you know, the opportunity, it's about trying to play finals footy, and there's no point being happy with just ticking over the games. In 2004, we were able to play in a prelim final against Brisbane, and we went pretty close to winning it. We were all, you know, 21-year-olds.
And did you think that it would just naturally?
Yeah, we did. I reckon we probably did, but we worked pretty hard.
And you had nothing to compare it to, I suppose. So it was all new, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And then I guess in 2005, we're still a pretty young group, and we lost that second semi final against Sydney, where Nick Davis kicked 3 goals in the last 10 minutes, and it was all, you know, there was a lot of little things along the way that, you know, helped our group prepare for what was ahead.
There has been a lot of talk about that year that you took the step backwards, I suppose, before you went on and won the flag in 2007, about the things that happened within the club, about the players challenging themselves to take the next step and all that sort of stuff. What do you remember of that? Because by that stage, I suppose, you guys and the guys who'd come in a couple of years before you were the core of the team, really. Just having to question each other, having to challenge certain guys to try and get the best out of each other when you had come in at 18 and started growing up there together. Was that difficult?
I think given, you know, the relationships we did have, it was a little bit easier. Like, we certainly weren't all best mates, but the group was at a stage where we just wanted to take the next step. We were sick of mediocrity and probably, as I said, we really were there to try and win finals from that point on, and we knew that we needed to make some changes. So the whole group just purely bought into what was it in front of us, and I don't think there was one person that, you know, it didn't sort of have a positive effect on. And things just started turning around really quickly at the club. The professionalism went to another level, and we started just winning more games of football.
It's funny that year. I hear about it a lot when another side has a down year, but it gives me the shits a little bit, because we still won 10.5 games, but people bottom out and they win 2 games and go, oh, we're doing the Geelong of 06. No, you're not. Like, you're not even competitive. Like, we were competitive in a lot of games. We just didn't get over the line or didn't know how to win, which we still had a bit of a hangover from 2005. We lost games that we didn't know how to win. And for me, it felt like we just spoke about the issues. What can happen in footy clubs, things can sort of just flow along and you just sort of get caught in that middling ground. And, you know, Steve touched on it. It wasn't necessarily just the on-field two-hour stuff. It was all the stuff around the outside. So, like, the professionalism from players, we really looked into how we did pre-season. So they completely overhauled, you know, the strength and conditioning department. They looked at how the coaching structure was. So, you know, they brought in, you know, new coaches. They brought in Neil Baum. It was just, like, it was lots of the little, you call them the 1 or 2 percenters, you know, when, you know, we sat back and they look and go, actually, yeah, if we can do this better, we can do this better, this better. It just made the club, like, move from out of that ground that we were just sort of sitting in, as Steve said, you know, that real mediocre, you know, we're good, but we're sort of not bad, we just float along.
Yep.
And it was, yeah, it's a big gamble to say, all right, let's really try some new things and embrace it, but it had a pretty good result.
Was that okay?
Yeah.
In the end? I suppose as players you must get to that point though where you want more.
Yeah. Well, I think you just want someone to show you something more or new or what's capable. We knew, like Steve was saying, we're so competitive and we're willing to learn, like, very coachable group. It's just like, all right, but how? How do we get there? And I think we just started moving away from what we were, but not forgetting like the good things we did as well.
Yeah, and I reckon like the coaching group in particular needs to take a fair bit of credit for that, because in that 2006 season we were changing a lot of things, the way we were preparing for opposition. You know, we're training, changing our strategies from week to week based on who we were playing, which is couldn't be any different than the way we prepared for 2007. Mm. We went in with a strong pre-season, this is the way we're going to play, and we'll get so good at it that hopefully we come to a point where no one can stop us. Mm. And it could have easily wavered by round five of the 2007 season, when we're sitting two games and two wins, three losses. You know, there's a fair bit of pressure on the club.
What's
but
yeah.
Bomber was just staunch in the way he sort of his messaging. We're going to continue to play this way, and take the game on and take risks and just completely sort of back up, you know, what he'd been coaching us through the pre-season and continue that messaging at a time of pressure. And then round six that season, it clicked, and from then on the belief just started to grow and grow and grow, and then we basically, you know, we felt unbeatable. But it could easily have been a different end of the story if we had lost, you know, one or two more games. The coach could have potentially been gone.
So was it that you trusted in him and what he was saying, or that you trusted in each other having had those years already together, or a little bit of both, do you think?
A bit of both. Oh, it's pretty hard not to have the belief when the senior coach, like Steve was saying, just goes, nah, we've done too much of this, and this is how, it's almost like, well, if we're going to go down, we're going to go down this way. And when, you know, he had the most to lose out of all of us, and he was like, no, this is, you know, how Geelong are going to play. This is it. So, yeah.
And the one thing is, he had our respect. He had sort of built us into the players that where we were ready to actually take our games to the next level. We just needed it all to fall together. From the moment we walked in the door, he was preaching the kind of things that come to fruition when it come to the big games. And he's certainly got to take so much credit for the way it all come together. It was just about finding the missing pieces, the 1 and 2 percenters, and putting them together, and maybe finding another 10%, and then from there it's just the confidence you have in what you're doing just continues to get stronger and stronger, and it affects every part of the football club.
Yeah, absolutely. And you, it was for years. You were talking, like, things changed kind of permanently, really, didn't they?
Mm.
Yep.
What about, as people growing up together, as you said, you come together when you're 18, your kids, having fun and all that sort of stuff. You've all, grown up. How many? Families, children, all that sort of stuff. Has it been good to be a part of each other's lives in that respect, I suppose, and just...
Yeah, I think, you know, the one thing... when you catch up with players or, you know, have a conversation, if I was to catch up with Jimmy, you know, now, see him, there's so many things that you've got to talk about. You feel like you know each other better than you know your best mates that you went to school with, because we've spent so much time with each other over the years. You just know, by the look on someone's face, the way they might be feeling or what they might be thinking. It's
pretty intimate change rooms.
Yeah,
and what, five and a half days a week for, you know, 40 something weeks a year. yeah, you're pretty much in each other's personal space that a lot of the time. And yeah, like Steve was saying, you know, you send him a text after a game and you know what joke's coming back from the other end, don't you?
Yeah. You know exactly. And the lingo that you use, I mean, you can basically talk a different language if you want. We could have a conversation and you probably wouldn't even know what we're talking about. We'd know exactly.
Yeah.
Because of the amount of moments we've had together. Yeah. And that goes for a fairly big group of, you know, the group that played together at Geelong.
Yeah, all those shared memories. And are you all the same people? You know how they say, like, you know, show me the boy at the age of 7 and, you know, I'll show you the man? Like, that no one really changes who they are in their core personality. Do you reckon that's true? Are you all the same people, essentially, that you were when you came together at 18 years of age?
I think when anyone who's 18, you come... My thoughts on it as a group, you probably don't show all of yourself because you're worried like how you'd be taken as the group, but because we have grown up all together, like, you know, the natural person comes out. So for example, like Jared Rook becomes Max Rook. Like that's almost the perfect example, isn't it? Like he was a real quiet, you know, guy, and then, you know, the real rookie comes out over the years. So that's probably the best way to put it. So but again, clearly it must have been part of the drafting, you know, protocol for the club, because if you stripped everyone's personality back, so like Steve was saying, every one of the guys from that group was so fiercely competitive and driven. Like, they could train by themselves for hours and on end. We'd do drills at 40 degree weather and they'd be still just as competitive at the start of training, and just wanting to win over something so stupid, like, you know, kicking the ball in a bin, or, you know, set shots, or playing some sort of match simulation game. So I think at the very core, all of us are pretty much the same, just some real odd or different personalities from there.
Yeah, and I think the one thing I guess the club would be proud of is, you know, there's people, players that come from a lot of different backgrounds throughout, you know, the time that we spent at the club, but you wouldn't say that too many have left without becoming better people. So, yeah, certainly not only has the club had a history of providing a good environment to be better footballers, but I think, you know, the people that they've had in charge of and the players have helped each other become better people. And we've learned a lot of lessons to take into life after footy.
Yeah, it'd be weird to sort of watch each other play for some different teams now, wouldn't it? But you at the Giants, James at Essendon, and
I'm finding it really strange. And
yeah, I've seen where you were, I suppose.
Yeah, I sent him a few texts and things like that when he's been playing brilliant footy for the Giants, and obviously Cal's had a great year, and Stokesy's got to his 200th, which is, you know, thoroughly deserved. The hardest thing for me was probably the first week or two back pre-season, and I'm not hearing the same gags come through the door. It's just going on. Something's a bit amiss here. I guess
it's Dobson's corner still.
Still the corner. Still thinking.
What is that?
Still, Steve Jobson. A lot of the senior guys, as you do, you have a lot of harebrained, get rich quick ideas, and
yes.
he picked up the name Steve Jobson for some of his brilliant ideas.
If we ever had sort of, you know, an hour in between a training and a weight session, a lot of us would just sit down in this chair and like sort of a bench seat in the corner of the change rooms and just, you know, throw our two or three ideas that we've got to become billionaires.
And can't understand why they wouldn't work and why no one else is doing them.
We'd get absolutely picked apart from each other.
Yeah.
I had plenty of ideas, but
you did have one good idea, Dad. that was one good idea.
One's all it takes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So one day you'll see me.
Yeah.
Has it gone quickly? 15 years? Does it still feel like yesterday that you were sitting there hoping to get your name called out?
In the morning, it doesn't feel like. Yeah, I feel pretty sore. It hasn't gone slow. It hasn't gone quickly, but football seasons do make the years go by quickly, because we're in such a weekly mode that, you know, your weeks get eaten up. Or, you know, for us, we'll play and then review train and then you're into another game, there's a week gone already. So yeah, I can see how I can go quickly in that sense.
Yeah, I mean I don't think it's gone quickly, mainly I would say if I reflect on my career, it's been I guess a bit of a roller coaster, where the start of my career was sort of had more negatives than positives, but the last 10 or 12 years have been pretty good. But
maybe you did go to the right club to help you get through that as well.
Sliding doors, I suppose. Yeah, early injuries probably had something to do with it. But when you get to an AFL club, it's not going to be handed to you on a platter. You still got to work extremely hard for it, and there is a lot of scrutiny that comes with being an AFL footballer. Your public property, and some weeks can be so hard to deal with as a young player that you can't block out the scrutiny that comes with what we do. But in saying that, there's so many more positives than negatives. You get to live your dream, you get to do what you grew up aspiring to do. Some weeks go extremely quickly, and then other weeks can feel like they last for weeks on end. Even a 7-day period can, after a bad loss or something's happening in your personal life, and you might be copying it externally and no one knows about, like, they're the times that can be really hard.
And when you need people around you who know you, I suppose that's the benefit from spending so many years together.
It is.
It's amazing, isn't it? And just like, imagine if Hawthorn had, I don't know, like all those little sliding door moments, but it just happened that Geelong called you all out and here you are.
Here we are.
Here Jimmy is.
Yeah. For a while, yeah. But wouldn't change it?
No. Definitely not. It's a pretty amazing job. Yeah, some people question it's a job, but pretty amazing thing you get to do. But I think what makes it pretty cool is there's not too many people who get to go to work where every person you work with is trying to get better. And I reckon if you ask a lot of people in the workforce, they could tell you half a dozen clock watchers or people trying harder not to do any work. So it does make a pretty exciting place to go to.
Thanks for listening to Superdraft 2001, a production of The Age Newsroom in Melbourne. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes and head to realfooty.com.au for all the latest AFL news.